It's Thursday, December 10th, 2020. I'm Tanya Harris, and welcome to TMI Daily, your daily roundup of everything people are talking about online since they aren't allowed to talk about it in person. Late this afternoon, the FDA approved the Pfizer COVID vaccine for emergency use, which means that we're one day closer to no longer calling you an asshole for not wearing a mask. Federal prosecutors in Delaware are investigating Hunter Biden's taxes, and he'd love to show them to us to prove that he did nothing wrong, if not for them being under audit. According to her social media, Taylor Swift will be releasing a surprise second album of 2020, Evermore, at midnight tonight. I say surprise because who could have guessed she would have done enough dating during the COVID crisis to make two albums out of it? Sony's Funimation bought animation streaming service Crunchyroll for $1.175 billion in a major consolidation of the anime industry. It's the biggest media news that nobody in Hollywood understands, but your one really weird friend seems way too hyped about. J.J. Abrams' production company Bad Robot is getting into video game development, according to a press release today. This should make it much easier for J.J. to continue to ruin the Star Wars universe now that he can do it in the video game world. Universal has decided to push back its Bob Odenkirk action thriller Nobody from its original release date February 19th to the following week, February 26th, making the film title Nobody an ironic choice since it perfectly describes who will go see an action thriller starring Bob Odenkirk while a pandemic is still going on, or probably after. The bad reviews and soft ratings last night's much-hyped The Grinch musical on NBC lost significant ratings to Fox's The Masked Singer. Sadly, there was no way for this Grinch to steal Christmas when he couldn't even take a small percentage of The Masked Singer's audience. Matthew McConaughey, RuPaul, and Storm Reid will host YouTube's New Year's Eve celebration, Hello 2021, which is perfect for anyone who wants to start the new year pretty much the same one this one is gone. After ending its run 8 years ago, Nickelodeon is bringing back the popular teen series iCarly with its original star, Miranda Cosgrove, for CBS's new streaming service, Paramount Plus. This is great news for fans of the show and terrible news for Miranda, who assumed she'd be doing so much more with her career by now. Ellen DeGeneres announced today that she has contracted coronavirus, which proves that you can get COVID even if it's not allowed to look you in the eyes unless it's being addressed. Now, let's send it over to tonight's TMI Daily cast and crew roundtable. Stay safe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of TMI Daily. I'm Veronica Aiello, and as always, I'm joined by some of my TMI Hollywood family. Later on in the show, we're going to be joined by Chef Christy Vega and owner of one of our favorite restaurants, Casa Vega. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Let's go around and say hello to everyone watching at home or listening to our TMI Daily podcast. Let's start with you, Pete.
I'm only here tonight for the food. That's it.
Okay. Well, I'm actually right outside of Casa Vega. So if you want me to get you something, let me know.
Oh, it looks so much warmer in that picture than it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that failed. Joe.
Hi, everyone listening to us on Google Podcast. Disney Plus has announced probably 187 new shows. Unfortunately, we are not one of them yet.
Okay. Elizabeth.
The Kardashians are going to Hulu. Not the show as it exists, but just them as an entity. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess that's happening.
Yeah, I can think of a few places I'd like to see them go.
People thought they were going to do some crackle type.
Right? Yeah, everyone's like, oh, they'll be gone after they leave E.
They're like herpes. They just keep thinking they're going to go away, and then all of a sudden it pops back up, and you can't fuck anybody.
Let's just say I feel betrayed.
Chris.
Yeah, hey.
Youth audience.
What's up, guys? I'm here and heard some things.
Okay, Emma?
Chag Sameach, everybody. Happy Hanukkah. It's a minor Jewish holiday, but it's close to Christmas, and it's also delightful. Enjoy some latkes.
And Stuart.
Smoke your marijuana, that's time for Hanukkah.
All right. Okay, so let's start tonight with just one question, where I take some of the stories from the top of the show and I ask you one question about them. Today, the FDA approved the Pfizer vaccine for emergency use in the U.S. My question is, will this news lead to more people being careful with their health since the vaccine is coming soon, or less careful because the vaccine is coming soon? Elizabeth, let's start with you.
Less? Everybody... No one's, you know, yes, we're technically in a lockdown now, but like, are we? gonna be rough for the next couple months.
Yeah, I feel like this is not gonna change anything one way or the other. I mean, people are gonna continue to be careless. How is this gonna change anything? Emma.
So I think that there are some people who are kind of already decided either way. Like, you're either going to be ultra careful regardless, or you're going to not care because you just think it's all bullshit anyway. I think, however, that there is a subsection of people for whom, like, they got frustrated saying that we had said they had to wear a mask forever, which is not what anyone ever said. But the idea of indefinitely wearing a mask was difficult. But when we say, hey, just wear a mask for, you know, however many more months, mm-hmm. that becomes a little bit more of a palatable thing if you know that you've got an end date, even if you don't know the exact date yet.
Okay. Stuart.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to change much until the general public sort of has access to the vaccine. I mean, I think like the people who are getting vaccinated right now are the nurses, the doctors, and people in nursing homes. That's like before the new year, certainly that's all anybody's going to see in terms of vaccination. So I think once it's like available to a wider percentage of people, and like once people know somebody who's been vaccinated, I think people are going to be like, oh, okay, it's over now. Because mm-hmm. people are going to want any excuse to say it's over.
Okay, Joe?
There was a really great article in the LA Times from a few experts that were talking about how well, at least what we have in here in California, but other states as well, when they're going to like a full kind of like crazy lockdown, which they kind of call like the abstinence kind of effect is what they were talking about, where they say you just can't do anything. And that's creating more of a rebellion against it than if they would have kind of said, okay, listen, we just need to slow down a bit and kind of worded it differently, did it a little bit differently, and people would do it differently. What's happened is because of just everyone – and then they go locking everybody down again and all that. It's just wearing on a lot of people. And I think that has a lot to do with it as well, too. It was a very interesting article. It's in the LA Times if you all want to read it.
Okay. Can you share that with us, Joe? Can you post it or something? Send it to us?
Yeah, I'll make sure we send it. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Pete?
I mean, I kind of think that the fact that people are going to wake up tomorrow morning hearing that this was approved by the FDA and not knowing, you know, I mean, the thing is when we do this, we're a little bit more informed because we're always talking about these news stories, but 99% of the people in the country only hear things in sound bites. So they're going to wake up tomorrow hearing that the FDA approved this vaccine, which isn't even the end of the process because they're not going to, they can't even start giving it out till the CDC approves it, which is, I think they said Sunday. So I think most people are going to hear that it's approved and think, okay, well, great. I can now just go about my business as usual and start living my life because, you know, I'll get COVID and get a shot like a few days later. And I think that it's only going to get much, I mean, it's going to get much worse no matter what the doctors are saying. That we should be losing 3,000 people a day to COVID between now and the end of the year. They said 70,000 people are going to die before New Year's Eve. I think it's actually going to get worse now because people are have so hyped the idea that the vaccine will get approved right now that most people just are not going to be smart enough to understand that that is not the end of the process and that normal people won't get a shot until March, April, May, June, something like that. And that's, and I think that they should have done this differently, but I think that because we live in a world where everything has to happen when you want it to happen, that they had to say, oh, tomorrow's the day, the next day's the day, today's the day, and that's it. I think we're going to be doomed for this for a long time.
This is a question that Pete and I have talked about amongst ourselves, but I kind of want to ask you guys this as we're talking about the vaccine, and I want to know what you guys think about this. So let's say we've all been vaccinated, and let's say it's been a year after we got vaccinated, things are going kind of back to normal. Are you guys still going to be wearing masks in certain situations? Has that changed the way you do things? Like, I'm thinking about like flying, for instance. Like, let's say I'm flying in 2 years. I think I might be that person that might be wearing a mask because I'm going to be in such a, you know, tight space with so many people. I know Pete and I have talked about this in the past, but I want to know what you guys think about this. Stuart.
Well, for answer, no. I mean, once people are vaccinated and once the, you know, the pandemic's over, I'm not wearing a mask because it's not necessary. Okay. And in terms of like protecting against, you know, in terms of worrying about other pandemics, like, yes, obviously that's possible, but at the same time, who knows what the pandemic's going to be, whether or not a mask would prevent the spread of it, and masks are pretty uncomfortable. So if I don't need to wear one to protect myself and others, I'm not going to.
Okay, Emma, what about you?
I don't think I'll be wearing one in terms of planes because it's more for protecting other people than protecting myself. Mm-hmm. And I don't expect other people to be doing it necessarily. But I do think that it has been a thing, like especially in Asian countries in the past, that you know you'll wear a mask if you just have like a cold. Mm-hmm. And like, I think I'll be doing that going forward. There's even if it's not like a deadly virus like COVID. Yeah. If I have a cold, no one else should get it because I just don't want to wear a mask. Also, I bought a whole bunch of real cute masks over the course of this pandemic, and I'll probably be getting more, and I've got them anyway. May as well use them if I'm sick.
That's right. I know. I feel you. Mm-hmm. Chris.
Yeah, I'm probably still going to be wearing masks for a while. Like, I don't know. Yeah, you know, I probably like you, Veronica. Like, it'd probably be a couple years, especially if I'm like on a plane or like at a concert or at the movie theater. Like, I'm going to be that weird guy wearing a mask. So what? Because like,
right there with you.
You know what I mean? Like, here's the thing. It's not even about like the whole pandemic thing. I just realized, like, I always knew people were kind of nasty before the pandemic. And then like, I saw how truly nasty we are. And clearly we've been nastier than I thought we were because we've been in the pandemic for a past year. So clearly motherfuckers are nasty and I'm not going to deal with it. I'm not going to put myself in that kind of danger anymore. Like, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of dudes walking out of the bathroom, not washing their hands and trying to grab me up. I'm over it. I'm just wearing a mask and I'm wearing gloves and I'm just be that guy.
Exactly. And that's what I was, where I was going with that. Elizabeth and then Pete.
Yeah, for I will probably also be joining you in the mask brigade. especially because they said, like, look, we're probably going to theoretically have to for a while, even after the vaccine and stuff, and, you know, even after it clears up. And, yeah, like, I know people, I know we have, like, all seen, like, oh, why do people wear the masks in Asian countries, but Emma's 100% right. It's, like, if you have a cold or something, it's a good idea to keep that shit to yourself.
Facts.
Yeah, so I definitely, like, and until, like, I have not quite an all clear from all the cancer stuff, but, like, I'm okay, but they told me I wouldn't really get one until 5 years later, so at least till 2025 we're fucking with a mask.
Wow.
And definitely wearing a mask to see my boy Hugh 2022. I'm coming for you, buddy.
Well, I think a couple of things. Firstly, I think, and this isn't a dig at you, Stuart, so please don't take it as such. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to think like Stuart that, oh, I got the vaccine, so I don't have to wear a mask anymore. And so since that is so completely not true, because we don't know if the immunity is going to last for 1 week, 1 month, 1 year. And who's going to know until people start getting COVID again when the immunity runs out. So for that reason alone, the fact that so many people aren't going to wear a mask is probably a good reason why you should wear a mask. But secondly, for me personally, I'm not worried so much about wearing a mask as just not going to places where there's going to be a lot of people. Regardless, I think that really, like, for a large percentage of people, there's going to be like that line where you're going to say, you know what, maybe I can be in an area where there's 25 people at a store that's like has 25 people, but I won't go to a theater until 2022, or I won't go into a movie until, you know, till 6 months after it's all clear or something like that, because again, you just don't know. And if you know, the thing that always bothers me about this is that I know I'm not going to be the last person to get COVID during this. I don't want to be the first one to get it when it comes back. And I don't think anybody should want to be, because as unprepared as we were the first time, we're not going to be that prepared for it again the second time either. I mean, we're going to be better prepared, obviously, and we're going to have, you know, better leaders behind it and everything else. But it's still, I think, because people are going to again assume that it's over, that we're going to be underprepared for a serious period of time before people catch it. Oh my God, the immunity is over now. And so I don't think I want to be in places where there's going to be a lot of people for quite a while.
Okay, I'm going to let Stuart respond to that, then we're going to move on to the next topic. Go ahead. Okay,
so, like I said, I'm not going to stop wearing a mask when I get vaccinated. I'm going to stop wearing a mask when I get vaccinated and the pandemic's over. Because, like Peter said, they might not necessarily be at the same time. And in terms of immunity not lasting, like, we truly do not know when the immunity isn't going to last, but it's going to be monitored. And, the fact that this has been such a big thing, people are going to want to prevent it from coming back a second time. So the next pandemic isn't going to be COVID. It's going to be something else, I think.
Well, you know, but here's the thing. The first COVID shots to the people in the phase 3 trials happens in September. So you know how long immunity is right now? A month. Because that's the only amount of time that they've actually, like, what people really think
right,
about.
So as soon as they lose immunity, I'll start wearing a mask again.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that people, the most they know data wise is that for a month you're immune, because it could be a month and one day later you're no longer immune. And that's the thing that, like, again, I don't want to be the first one to get it on the second time around because all of a sudden it's back, you know?
Well, the mask also, like, they provide some protection for the wearer, but they're, the vast majority of what the mask is for is protecting others.
Yeah, but you know what? If you wear a mask, it'll protect you pretty much too. I mean, maybe not as much as it would protect you if both of you wearing a mask, but I'll take my shot that I'll
not
wear
nearly
a mask
as much.
Well, but the best way to do it is just not to be around a lot of people for a while.
Okay. So Ellen DeGeneres announced that she tested positive for COVID. My question to you is, how many late night joke writers submitted at least one joke about this being the first time Ellen's gotten positive news this year?
Called out?
Pete?
Well, I mean, that question's in there because literally every person. So just so you know, I mean, every person who sent the joke today sent a variation on that joke. And I immediately thought to myself, I know that like Jimmy Kimmel tonight did not do that joke, I'm sure. But I know somebody wrote it, and I know somebody wrote it so that in the writer's room they could all laugh about it, because, you know, everybody in entertainment loves this story about Ellen being a complete pain in the balls with people. And so yeah, they definitely wrote the joke. They all giggled about the joke in the room. They giggled about it all the way up until somebody said, you know, I don't think we should do that one. But yeah, it was out there.
Did you guys read, like, I was reading a lot of people's comments about this story, and a lot of people were saying, oh, we think she's lying about this because she wants to get sympathy because of what happened with her. Did any of you, like, read any of those stories or any of those
No.
like, comments? Yeah, like, people are being brutal on Twitter. Elizabeth.
Well, that's funny because one comedian I follow, she didn't do the test positive thing. She's been very, like, vocal and, like, about masks and quarantining and stuff like that. And she was saying, you know what doesn't help is the, like, oh gosh, I got COVID, stay safe, everybody, and, like, not explaining how you think you might have got it, because, you know, that if everybody on the set is being tested regularly and quarantining and following all the protocols, is she doing something different?
Mm-hmm.
Is she maybe having some indoor dining? Her pod is not really a pod, that kind of a thing. We don't know. So she was like, if I got COVID, I would, you know, tell people, like, here's, like, where I went. This is where I'm pretty sure I got it. like, and obviously inform, you know, those people as well. And just be, and then you could be like, see, I did everything. I only went to like the store. I only went on a hike, but oh, on the hike, I got, you know, someone coughed on me, but, you know, that kind of a thing. Cause we don't really have great contact tracing.
You know, that's interesting, Elizabeth, that you are bringing that up, because a lot of celebrities who have tested positive for COVID, I do feel like they do come out and they say, well, this is what, you know, we were doing then, or we were on a shoot, we were traveling, or whatever that may be. But that's a very good observation. Chris, and then Joe.
I was just going to say, like, if there were comedy writers that probably wrote that joke, and, you know, the host is clearly not going to do them, they probably, that host saved their lives. Cause like, I feel like these comedy writers don't understand the kind of money that Ellen has. And she has like make you disappear money. So I probably wouldn't fuck with her on that situation. Cause like, look, if she ain't got no problem, like telling motherfucker that his breast stinks and like firing him, you think she got a problem? You think she's going to be cool? Like,
I actually don't think any of the other late night shows have gone after her.
No. They probably wrote the shit, but like, hopefully none of them are stupid enough to tweet it or some shit like that. Cause if she see that, she's taking names. I don't think she's playing around. That's all I'm saying. She got that look in her eyes that says, you can go bye bye. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Joe.
Well, it is a real shame because they can't contact trace where Ellen got it from, because all of her interns have been spitting and coughing in her food for years. Oh! I went a different direction!
A different joke!
If I'm not here tomorrow, then Chris is right!
Hey, if she catches this show, you're done. It was nice knowing you, my guy. Nice knowing you.
We're
going to
be done.
For real.
It'll just be like me. It'll just be me. You can deny it all now.
I don't know. I feel like
it's all down.
Yeah, listen, I feel like she's a guilty by association type person. Yeah. She's like, no, what? One of you? All of you.
Yo, you guys all laughed at it, huh?
Whoa. Uh-huh.
Can I just say that the opinions of Joe do not reflect on
it's too late for that.
Finally,
it's too late for that.
We get to
That's
say
over. That. It's over. It's too late for that. She's already decided.
About me.
She has already decided. We're all gone.
Emma.
So for what it's worth, first of all, Hollywood has kind of known that Ellen's a monster for a long time. It's just if you're not in the industry that you didn't know that. There was some tweet that was going around a while ago that was like, moving to LA is like realizing that it's actually kind of shitty, and you find out that Ellen's a monster. And it's like, oh, that was for real. So someone has to have survived criticizing her, because enough people know about that. She can't possibly get everyone.
These are all rich producers, not slubs that work in a writer's room.
I mean, it got down to us before like all this happened. We still knew about it. Before all this happened.
They did.
So, like, you can criticize her and live. That's a low bar to set, but it is possible. But if I'm also gone tomorrow, maybe you can't. As a comedy writer.
I'm apparently going to be writing on Antonio Sabato Jr.'s movie next week.
And then, as a comedy writer who did write that joke, in all fairness, when you have to write jokes every day, sometimes you just churn out the jokes so you can like get past the obvious ones and then get to the better ones. So I'm sure we're not the only ones who did that.
And I wasn't in any way trying to say that you're a hack or anything like that. I'm just saying that I have a feeling that since I got a variation of that joke from five different people, that it was quite a few more that made that joke too.
Emma, why would you do that? Why would you admit that you wrote it? Now she's definitely going to kill you. We might have had a chance just by being guilty with Joe. You just admitted that you wrote it. Now you're definitely on the list.
Pete already said that all of his writers wrote that joke, and I'm one of his writers. This is already
you know. I didn't call you a monster, Ellen.
can I just say, may God be with you both. But Ellen is one hell of a dancer. She's a good dancer.
Yeah, she dances on graves.
I will say it out loud. I'm happy that people called her out, because people should be calling out all these people that are not nice people. I mean, regardless of how powerful they are, if they're not nice, they should get called out, and they should be like either removed or at least taught a lesson. And you know what? I think that what happened to Ellen was probably about this, the like easiest she could have gotten off in this whole situation. Awesome. And maybe if it wasn't for COVID being in the way, and it'd been like during the production of the show when it was actually, when there would have been people around each other, it might've been worse. So maybe she got lucky about the COVID crisis, but you know what? Maybe if people get called out more, there'll be nicer people to deal with in entertainment, because I haven't dealt with a lot, but the few I've dealt with, most of them are kind of jerk offs. And maybe if they were getting called out more often, they just wouldn't act like that.
I'm sorry. I'm on the phone. Hang on. Yeah. Jess, he said that you can call him out. Yeah. Peter said that, Jess. So
I stand by my record about how nice a person I am, because I know I am.
Before we move on, I just want to make my statement again that I think Ellen is a wonderful dancer. So, Sony's anime company bought the popular anime portal Crunchyroll today for over $1 billion. My question is, I don't know if you noticed, but I'm not a 16-year-old male virgin or Asian. So for that reason, can someone explain anime to me? Because I sure don't get it.
Whoa, Veronica. Now, first of all, Joe got Ellen about to come for us. Now you got the nerd community coming for us? Why would you even say that?
I don't understand
how strong they are? Do you understand?
I think we should take bets on which one of us is going to get knocked off first.
If I don't show up tomorrow, then, you know.
No, Donna, you don't worry about it.
Look, Veronica did say that to me earlier today. That I mean, like, and the thing is, I get people are into like all kinds of different things, and you know, and so I guess anime's got a place. But to me, it seems like the K-pop of animation, because I don't get it either. I don't understand what, like, everything seems to be over sexualizing, like girls that look like they're 12-year-old Asian girls,
Stop watching your anime on Pornhub. That's what? First of all.
Stop watching your anime on Pornhub. I mean, it took me 2 seconds to pull a clip of anime stuff, and every girl in there is clearly drawn to turn on like the kids that are watching it, because they don't draw these characters. And I'm sure there are positive role model female characters. I'm not going to say there aren't, but there's clearly a lot of stuff that's, you know, that's kind of geared towards horny teenage boys.
Thank you for that explanation of anime from somebody who's never actually watched it.
Yeah.
Also, now, if you don't mind, I would like to give Emma the floor, because Emma is not a 16-year-old virgin boy.
To be fair, Peter, they actually sexualize the men too, because most of the villains look like females anyway. So, like, it's across the board. It's not just women. Most of them look like they probably like some men too. It's all good.
Okay. Sorry, Pete. Did I cut you off?
No.
Okay, Emma.
Oh, boy. Okay, so first and foremost, it's not weird to be a virgin at 16. That is too low an age. Just going to start
that. That's a very good point.
Just going to open with
that. Who's sexualizing teenagers now, Peter?
Yeah. That's fucking weird. Secondly, for every clip of an anime you can find that is over-sexualized, I guarantee you I can find a live-action thing that's sexualized, because we have whole websites devoted to that, too. We already referenced Pornhub.
That's called whataboutism.
It's an art form. It's a medium. It is not a genre. It's a medium, not a genre. Thirdly, there's also tons of stuff that's, like, even the stuff that isn't porn, that's geared towards horny teenage boys. Like how in every live-action film, pretty much, there's, like, a 60-year-old dude who's dating a 20-something-year-old woman. That happens all the time. That's not just a Japanese anime thing. And then finally, going into medium, not genre, there are some truly brilliant animes out there because they can tell these incredible fantastical stories for the exact same price point as like a stay-at-home drama, because it's animated. There are some things that like delve deep into philosophy and psychology that are brilliant, like mind-blowing works of art. And it's super fucking weird that you're saying it's just about the porn, because it's not.
Okay,
I didn't say it was about porn. Did I say? Veronica. I never said the word porn. Actually, somebody else said it was that I was talking about the Pornhub version of it. It wasn't, because I don't watch any anime. I'm not gonna deny it.
Veronica, yes, Joe. I want you to go and find a movie called Your Name.
Okay.
And watch that, and then tell me what you think of it.
Your Name. I promise I will. I was just going to ask Emma to recommend something for me to watch, an anime. So I'll give it a shot.
I would start with just about anything from Studio Ghibli.
Uh-huh.
Fabulous. They're all incredible films. Hayao Miyazaki. Spirited Away is the biggest one, but Princess Mononoke is also brilliant.
Come on, talk about it. Ponyo, talk like, about it.
There are so many. Howl's Moving Castle.
Okay. Talk about it. Talk about it.
Those are all really wonderful. Because
that's very accessible.
Delivery Service.
Kiki, yep.
Okay,
guys, our guest is waiting to come on, actually, so I will definitely, I promise you, I will check out anime. Send me like two or three recommendations and I will watch them this week, and I promise you. And then I will tell you what I think.
Much Spirited Away.
Yeah. I mean, I picked your name because I think it's up your alley.
Okay, cool. Okay, so our guest today, Christy Vega, is the owner of one of Los Angeles's most beloved restaurants, Casa Vega, which has been serving some of the best Mexican foods in the San Fernando Valley to locals and celebrities alike since 1956, when her father, Ray, first opened the Sherman Oaks restaurant. Please welcome to TMI Daily, Christy Vega. Hi, Christy. Can you hear me okay?
Ken, how are you?
Thank you so much for coming on. I'm sure you must be super busy.
Yeah, it is a very busy time, but I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So before we get started, I have to tell you that I've been going to Casa Vega since I was a kid. So you cannot be Mexican and raised in this area and not go to Casa Vega for special occasions and whatnot. And my husband, Pete, who's also on screen, we go there all the time. So again, thank you so much for coming on. So I have a couple questions for you, and then I'm going to open it up to the panel. Okay. So before we get started, would you mind telling our audience a little bit about the history of Casa Vega? Now, I know your father opened it in 1956, but the story actually starts with your grandfather. Is that correct?
That's correct. So my grandparents immigrated to Los Angeles from Tijuana in the 1930s, and they opened one of the very first Third Street in downtown LA. And it's called Cafe Caliente. I was there for 18 years. It thrived. My grandfather, right when they were making it a state park, he moved it into Hollywood, thinking that they were going to outlaw alcohol. And Mexican cuisine and Mexican owners weren't always very welcomed outside of downtown at that time, and it failed in Hollywood. And so they were very depressed. And my dad was in college at the time in hospitality school, and he dropped out and came back to LA and took care of his parents and worked a gas station and life insurance jobs, and met someone and catering at night who knew the restaurant from downtown and was like, you guys have to open. And she had a spot on Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks. And so she gave my dad a couple, you know, I think it was like 3 months free rent, and he was 22. And he opened Casa Vega to really kind of revitalize his parents and my grandparents and bring back kind of Cafe Caliente in a different way. So it's really interesting that the same recipes, except, you know, some of the modernized things we've added, that we serve at Casa Vega are the same exact recipes that we served at Cafe Caliente from the 1930s, which is all just really our family recipes, nothing fancy.
That's a great story. I love hearing stories like that. So forgetting the pandemic for a second, it's very rare that a restaurant stays around long enough to be considered an important restaurant or part of the community. What do you think it is about your restaurant that's made it such a longtime favorite for so many of us?
No, I think that it's kind of, unlike most of LA, it's a little bit of a hideaway. So, you know, sometimes in LA, it's all about being and the optics and presenting to the outside world. And I think that all of us, especially those, you know, that are in the entertainment industry, that they need a place to kind of go and just be normal and be themselves and not have to worry about who sees them or who's sitting next to them or how they look when they come in. Honestly, when all our celebrities have come in for the decades and generations, it's always very casual. It's in jeans and t-shirts, and it's a place to kind of just relax. And I think the fact that our staff doesn't recognize 90% of them totally helps as well. Like, if you're not on Telemundo, nothing's shifting at Casa Vega. Telenovela, that's a different story. Red Sea, or like regulars and the people that come, and then that's who the staff kind of knows. I think that the entertainment industry has always kind of liked that a little bit.
So when the pandemic hit and the city went into lockdown at first, what was your initial reaction to as far as how you were going to handle the restaurant? Did you have like a plan in place, or were you just kind of blindsided like everybody else was in the restaurant business?
100% totally blindsided. I watched it like you did on, I think it was like on a Sunday. I watched Garcetti say we're not for the next day. I was like, God. And then the next couple of days, I was like, well, we could do so. You know, like we can figure it out for a couple of weeks. It's not that bad. And I started just watching the news, and I was in the restaurant. We went down to a skeletal crew, and the virus just kept getting worse, and all this stuff kept coming out. And I'm watching customers come in and my staff, and we're having gloves on and certain things, but we certainly didn't have masks, know what the virus was. And I was thinking, you know, sales are down 90%. My staff is generally over 65. My dad's 86. I'm a mom of four. What am I doing? Not even mm-hmm. stay open. I don't know if we're public. I don't know if I can. So I shut the restaurant down 3 days in, and it was heartbreaking because at Costa Vega, a lot of the staff, most of the staff's been there 20 years, 30, 40 years. Some people before I was born. So it weighed so hard on me because we've never, ever done that. And it was the my life when I just said, we're going to furlough everybody and we're going to see what happens. And I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if Costa Vega was going to come back or what was going to take place. So about 6 weeks went by, PPP came out, and we did our drive-through. And I thought, I had to get everybody back to work to make the PPP work at the time. And it was the best thing in the world because the whole crew came back. We were gone for about 6 weeks. We did this kind of elaborate drive-through, and the reception of the community was so heartwarming. And I think like all my staff had tears in their eyes. Everybody came out and poured their support into the drive-through, which helped us then really pivot into when they allowed us to do outdoor dining. And then once we were able to do that, I felt like we were kind of back. I mean, we totally missed the inside of Costa Vega, but at least all the staff was back together.
Yeah, I really love your drive-through that you have. I was just there last week, and it's so efficient, and it's great. You know, it's wonderful to see. Do you see a lot of your regulars coming through the drive-through, the ones that normally would go eat there?
Yes, absolutely. And everyone, especially in the second shutdown, has been very supportive, and they're in there and they're buying, you know, gift cards and 500 cards and asking with the help support. And it's just kind of an awful situation that's happening, but at the same time, the amount of love and support is really nice, and it's valuable, you know, especially in these times when now it used to be 1 in 6 restaurants wasn't going to make it, and I think that's skyrocketed to
mm-hmm. How do you feel about the way the city and the state has handled the industry during this crisis?
I've been pretty vocal about it, and it has nothing the politics actually left. But I was really shaken and rattled by how flippant LA officials were at kind of talking out restaurants of COVID, especially when they had done so much to serve. And we poured over 30. We all took such active steps, and for them to try like, well, it's just there's, you know, 1,000 out of 31,000 restaurants isn't trying, so we're going to shut you all down. It was just brutal. And such big employers to so many working class Angelenos, people that really struggle and so hard, and they clean our dishes and our bathrooms. And the poorest of the poor and the livelihood at the holidays without any scientific proof. I just thought so cruel. And restaurant owners across LA, had anything ever been traced back to outdoor dining, one case or anything, I think we all would have been like, no problem. Like, we don't want to get anybody sick. But to not, and I think it was sad. And I think that the restaurants of LA are definitely shaped by our officials that we don't really matter. We don't have big lobbyists. We're not rich people. We're entrepreneurs. We're hustlers. We work, you know, we don't have massive amounts of kind of box. And it was a real education into politics about how this is kind of all perceived you know, I think these officials, they want to look like they're doing something, and I want the numbers to go down too. But I just don't know if hurting kind of the poorest people is the way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's tough. It's really tough. You know, I mean, we try to support our local restaurants at least once a week. We get takeout from, you know, the different community restaurants. But one of the reasons I asked you to come on as well was because I was so moved when I found out what you're doing with the Foo Fighters, with Dave Grohl. You are definitely a strong supporter of restaurant workers who have taken a huge hit, like you were just talking about, during this time. And you teamed up with Dave Grohl, like I just said, from the Foo Fighters, and you have been working together on something meant to help undocumented back-of-the-house restaurant staff with the nonprofit organization Know Us Without You LA. Can you tell our audience about that, and how can they support?
Yes. So it's this wonderful thing that the Foo Fighters and I, we have teamed up for, and that, you know, since the pandemic has hit, there's been so many restaurants that have gone out of business, and obviously heightened since the second pandemic or the second shutdown. But it's really a travesty because, you know, in big operating restaurants, you know, maybe everybody's, their papers are good, you know, like Casa Vega and stuff. We've been there around forever, but the majority and the dirty fact is that sometimes that they're not. And those people that do not have the right paperwork, they cannot apply for unemployment without raising flags. And so the fact is there's tons and tons of undocumented restaurant workers that have been unemployed since March, and not of their own doing. They don't want to be employed. They're not homeless. They're not people that don't want to work. They want to work. They just can't. All the restaurants have gone under business. So Know Us Without You was founded by these two amazing men, and they were restaurant workers that got unemployed and realized that some of their fellow workers, they don't have unemployment. There's no stimulus checks for them. There's no unemployment checks for them. They are literally starving. And so they started providing food and meal kits for these families. And I started seeing the pictures and what they were doing. And it just broke my heart into a thousand pieces. And I visualized a lot of people that I knew in this situation. And so we thought, what can we do? And obviously no restaurant is in a good financial situation right now, not Casa Vega, not anybody. But the best thing when you're hurting is to help others. And so I thought, so I asked Dave, and Dave Grohl's a big foodie, and he loves to cook, and we've cooked before and barbecued and kind of done different variations. And I asked him, and I said, you know, what would you think of doing this? And we do the taco, and it goes to Know Us Without You, the profits, and that way we can help these restaurant workers that have zero voice. There's nobody out there fighting for them. There's nobody out there that says they exist. There's nobody that gives them an unemployment check. They're just forgotten. They're kind of the forgotten victims of COVID. And he was like, absolutely, there's, you know, zero safety net. And so he talked with his band, and they were on board. And so Dave and I, and so we started smoking meat, and he wanted to do a smoked brisket taco. And we came up with this taco smoked brisket and a Mexican coleslaw and some pickled onions. And it's really good. And I think more than anything, when I came up with the idea, we weren't in this second situation where I would be a genius, but it wasn't. Like, we were thinking this before, but I think what's so nice is that friends kind of coming together. And, you know, Dave gets to do something nice for every restaurant worker in LA that's struggling right now. And also in a way to support CV and kind of what we're going through. And I just think it's an amazing thing when people come together and help those that really need it. And I would say the undocumented restaurant workers definitely need it these days.
Absolutely. And again, you know, thank you so much for doing this. As you know, as a first generation Mexican and a daughter of immigrants, I can't tell you how moved I was by this, because, you know, you think about so many people that are going through such dark times, and there's so many like pockets of people that get forgotten. And because of people like you and them and, you know, coming together to do this, I just think it's amazing. So it's nice to hear something positive coming out, especially like, you know, during the holidays too. It must be so much harder. But okay, I'm going to open it up to the panel. Does anybody have any questions for Christy? Let's start with you. Let's start with Pete.
Hi, Chrissy. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. Like Veronica said, she and I are huge fans of the restaurant. When it's open, we're there. We love to go eat at Casa Vega all the time. One of my questions is that with all the things that have kind of happened with the changes I'm sure you've had to make because of the pandemic, are there any kind of thoughts of keeping some of these things afterwards? Like one of the things I used to love going to a restaurant and just being in a restaurant, and I never liked to get takeout. But since this happened, I realized that I don't mind so much going to get food and then us going to sit someplace and watch cars or look at the sky or whatever else. Is there any thought to kind of incorporate some of the methods that you're using now into the business once it can be reopened again?
Absolutely. So us too. Like, we never dealt with to-go very much. I am anti-delivery app because they just hurt restaurants. But I love our drive-through, and we're going to get a better online system working on it now. So we want to keep that going, and we want kind of our expedited food to go and kind of this new second wind we have with it. We definitely want to keep that. I also I want to keep that patio. I want to keep the one closest. I don't know if you've been over. We tented both parking lots at Casa Vega. And one is across the alley, and they'll never let me keep it. But I think I could keep the one closest to Casa Vega if I could get the permits right. And I think I will keep that. And that's something that would be great. And it would add seating, and it would help us in the next year to kind of recoup some of the losses that we had. And I think it just gives Casa Vega... you know, I always like the darkness of it. It reminds me of my dad and my family, but a lot of people have commented in COVID that they love the outdoor of it. And then they like outside sitting outside in margaritas. So definitely, I mean, great. I hope that it next year I can talk to you guys with a bunch of silver linings that came out of all this.
I have to say, I do miss those margaritas. They're so good. So good. Joe.
I think that is best thing that has come out of COVID is alcohol to go.
Oh, you are doing them to go? I didn't know that. Okay. I know what I'll be doing this weekend.
There you go.
Joe?
Thanks for coming on the show, Christina. By the way, that brisket taco is amazing. I grabbed that like on the first day, and it's fantastic. So I was just reading today that a couple restaurants, Tin Horn Flats and one of them is all that, is defying the order. And doing outdoor anyway. What is your feeling on the restaurants that are defying the order?
I totally understand it and agree with it. Agree with their frustration with it. We could never do that at Casa Vega. I feel like we're too high profile, and I've slammed the officials enough. I'm sure they'd be right there to like give me whatever penalty I was. But you know, I think everyone's just so frustrated. I think the owners are so frustrated, and they feel so unfairly picked upon that the restaurant industry, people see busy tables and they see a busy restaurant and they think we're all just rich, rich people. And it's not true. We are hardworking, working class people that, you know, we're entrepreneurs, and most years we do okay because we work really hard. But we could never survive a pandemic. Restaurants can't do this. And you know, so I think the people that are doing are just desperate. And while I never am a rule follower, I never agree with breaking the law. I totally get it. And I get it.
Elizabeth?
This is non-COVID related. Did you see any kind of boost after Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Yeah. I personally thanked Mr. Tarantino for keeping us relevant for the next couple decades. That was a huge work on Vega survived for the next couple decades. And he's a massive fan. And, you know, El Coyote, which is another great Mexican restaurant, they're in it as well. But they were in the story. They're in the actual Sharon Tate story. Yeah. Kind of interjected in there. So I was like, thank you. Like, when they came, I was like, how many other Mexican restaurants are you looking at? They're like, no, you guys are in the script. Like,
That's great.
Fun fact is I'm the hostess in that movie, Seating Brad and Leo. It's just the back of my head, but you'll see first girl's hair leading them, and that's me.
Oh, awesome.
Hashtag in.
Does anybody else have any other questions for Christy? Joe?
Let Chris go first. I want to do the last one.
I also have a non-COVID question, and it's actually going to be very random at thought, but I'm just wondering, do you know who the guy is on the roof that's behind Veronica on her picture?
His name is Roberto.
And you know him! That's fantastic!
Sheila Cool!
Good question, Chris. Joe?
All right, this is the last one, but Christina, is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Oh, you...
Jesus.
Two thumbs up for Die Hard Christmas.
Boom!
Yesterday, that's why he's asking you. It's not just something.
And solid, sir.
Any final questions, Pete? Did you have another question?
It's a sort of a question. I'm just wondering. For years, there's been a lot of restaurants here in Los Angeles, and I'm sure in a lot of other places that have become more places to go than to go because the food is good. Casa Vega is definitely not one of those places because it's both. But do you think that this pandemic might actually weed out some of those kind of places? Not that you would be hoping to, but do you think that there might be like a turn towards more restaurants that people are going to because of quality and not just so they can be seen? I guess would be more of the question.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's a consumer choice, but I think it's definitely going to be a reality choice that I would say probably about 75% of the restaurants that you know in LA right now will not exist next year. And as sad as that is, definitely out. And I think restaurants were already kind of trying to change and figuring out. There was already we were in crisis, and I think that some restaurants are talking about being clean, or it's about a certain chef and not about the customer. I think all of that is going to revert into making sure that customers are first and clients are happy and serving everybody to the utmost, because restaurateurs are just going to be so happy that wonderful people like you are back in our booths, and we want to do everything to make you happy and not like not give you a, you know. That's what I
Well, thank you so much, Christy, for coming on. Now, I know even if people don't live locally, they can still support by buying those awesome shirts. Yeah. We have some coming in the mail, by the way. They're super cute. It's I think it's the tacos playing the guitar, right, or something. They're adorable.
And Dave has like a Casa Vegas apron on, and yes. It has.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to have all our information and your websites on our social media. So for anybody who wants to support this amazing cause, and for those of our viewers and listeners who have never been to Casa Vega, you must try it. It's located at 13301 Ventura Boulevard in the city of Sherman Oaks. Christy, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Love you guys. Nice to talk to you.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Got to order out this weekend.
Yeah, that brisket taco is.
We can be so hungry, you guys.
It is really, it is so good.
It just kind of just it just melts in your mouth. It's
my gosh.
Yeah. Okay. So now we're moving on. So since this is our last full week of shows for 2020, all week we are celebrating the holidays in our final segment. Tonight, in order to mark the beginning of Hanukkah, we thought we'd play a new game called the Hanukkah game. The rules are simple. There's going to be two teams. Team one, the Goys, will be everyone who is not Jewish. And team two will be Emma, representing the
Jewish. And Stuart.
And Stuart. Oh, Emma and Stuart. Oh, we have to try. Sorry, Stuart. So there's 10 questions about Hanukkah. Peter will ask one member of the Goy a Hanukkah question. If they get it right, the team gets a point. If they get it wrong, Emma can answer it. Or Stuart. If she or Stuart get it right, they get a point, and also get a second point by answering a question about Christmas. If they get the Hanukkah question wrong, they get no points and they're bad Jews. And we'll have to live with that guilt forever and one day. Now, I think Danny wanted to join us for the game. Did he log on, Pete, by any chance?
I didn't see him, so no.
Okay.
I just want to say this as an addendum. Emma and Stuart, I don't know shit about Hanukkah, and I apologize. But to be fair, I also don't know shit about Kwanzaa, so.
I don't know much about Christmas either, and I grew up Catholic, so.
Question. What do we do if we already have guilt over being bad Jews?
Yeah, I'm gonna say,
you're going to have more guilt. We're just piling it up.
That's actually what you can, by the way. The winning team wins guilt.
We already have. The guilt container is full.
You know, you say that, but no. Veronica and I grew up Catholic, so we know all about guilt.
All the guilt.
Yeah,
I'm nothing.
That much about
I was raised by lapsed Catholics, but we didn't do any church stuff. So
just know, Emma, if your parents are watching, if you don't know about your heritage, you'll be killing your mother. You're killing her.
Killing your mother.
I'm already more Jewish than I am.
Welcome to the Hanukkah game. Content problem. Okay, that's enough of that. Okay, that was enough. That was fun for him. Oh, wait, I think Danny does want to join us, so.
Okay. Hey.
What the hell is that music?
More Christians piling on.
My
that's like that entrance music.
I'm feeling pretty good. I saw that Rugrats special 20 years ago. No, like 25 years ago. Got a shot. I know a little more about that, I hope.
And I watched some of the Leonard Nimoy animated Bible stories, so which were Old Testament. So
there's our other goy.
Okay, so now we've just added another goy to the team. Okay, so again, let me explain very quickly how this is going to work. So I'm going to ask a question of one of you goy about Hanukkah. It's a multiple choice question, so it won't be that hard. But if you get it right, you get a point and your team gets another question. If you get it wrong, then Stuart and Emma can answer that question. If they get it right, they get that point, and then they get one question about Christmas. So in theory, by getting it right, they can actually get 2 points. Let's start with, how about we start with Elizabeth? Elizabeth. Right. Here's your first question. The following two foods are traditionally linked to the Hanukkah miracle. Let me say that again. The following two foods are traditionally linked to the Hanukkah miracle. Are they potatoes and apricot jam, dairy and milk, dairy and potatoes, sour cream, and applesauce?
What was the first one again?
The first one was, hold on. Let me see. The first one was potatoes and apricot jam.
They do applesauce and sour, apples and sour cream.
Okay, so that's your answer?
Yeah, that's my final answer.
Okay, I'm sorry. That is not the correct answer. So, Emma.
Oh, those are toppings for the latkes.
Right, that's what I was thinking, though, but I can't play. Yeah.
Don't answer the question now because you don't want to give a point to the other team. So Emma, you get to answer this question. Do you know the answer to it by any chance?
Would you read the complete list of options again?
Yes, I'll read you your options one more time. The following two foods are traditionally linked to the Hanukkah miracle. Potatoes and apricot jam, which we already now know is not the – I'm sorry. That wasn't the one. It was sour cream and applesauce.
I mean, we do know it's not the one. But
Potatoes and apricot jam, dairy and oil, or dairy and potatoes?
Dairy and oil.
Is that your final answer?
The one with the oil.
Okay, that is correct. Uh-oh. So the Jews just got what points. and let's now go down to your Christmas question. Okay, so Emma, for a second point, Only one book of the New Testament details Jesus's birth. Which is it, Luke, John, Matthew, or Mark?
I think it's Luke.
It's harder than I expected. Is that the first one?
The one that people quote a lot is Luke. 3:16 is the one of your quotes.
John 3:16, but that's not Jesus. That's not the one. Okay. That's not the one. Isn't it Matthew? I think it's Matthew. I think it's the first one. I think that's the one that all the others are based on.
Okay, well,
go with Maddie.
Is that your final answer?
Sure.
Okay, that is incorrect. I'm sorry. The actual answer is Luke. But you did get 1 point, and that's great. So so we're going to move on. Joe, you're getting the next question on the board team. This is an easy one. How many Hanukkah candles make up the menorah? Is it 6, 7, 8, or 9?
Well, there was 8 days, but then you also have the one that lights it, so it is 9.
Okay, so that's your final answer.
Yes.
Okay, well, you were right and wrong at the same time. There's actually only 8 candles on the menorah.
No, because there's the one in the center that lights it. That's 9.
Well, there's 9 candles altogether, yes.
That's what you said. How many candles is on the menorah? That's what you said.
Okay, you're technically right. You're right. Okay, so I'm
the 8 candles
point.
Represents the 8 days.
So
it depends on what night it is, how many candles you put out.
Okay, well, let's
go by the full.
Stuart, don't help right now because I might be getting to that at some point. Okay, so the guy just got a point. Okay, so let's go to Chris. Chris, here's your question. Each night, how long must the Hanukkah candle burn? Is it either until the last member of the household goes to bed, from sundown to sunrise, 18 minutes, or at least a half hour?
I know there's a holiday where you can't eat from sun up to sundown, right? I can't remember what that one is, but I feel like that's also the same thing with the candle. So I'm going to go with from sunrise to sunset.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. That is incorrect. Okay. So that means Stuart, you can steal this question. Do you know the answer?
Wait,
should I read it again?
Wait. But there is a holiday where you have to fast, right?
It's the holiest day of the year. The big one of Judaism.
That's
the most important one by far.
I knew it though.
Stuart, do you know the answer?
You know.
You need me to read it again.
Can you read them again?
Okay, each night, how long must the Hanukkah candles burn? Is that until the last member of the household goes to bed, 18 minutes, or at least a half hour?
We always did until the last person goes to bed, so.
That's your final answer?
Yeah.
Well, according to Hebrew law, it's only a half hour. So that's all that you have to actually keep it lit. So, sorry, you did get that incorrect. So the score is still tied, and that makes you a bad Joe. Bad Joe.
That's my parents' fault. That's what they always did it until someone went to bed.
Okay, well, now you can tell them they got to just do it for a half hour. It'll cause a fire.
I'll be sure to tell them that.
Call your mother and tell her she's a bad Jew. Do it right
bad
now.
Bad Jew.
Call your mother.
Okay, do it on the air.
Okay, so let's move on. Let's move on to Veronica right now for the next question. Veronica, there is a 9th candle for the menorah, as we already said earlier, which is used to light the other candles. What is it called? Is it the Shamash, the Gadol, the Hebrinskel, or the Ner Hammurabi?
It's not the Mishpucha?
I'm going to guess it's the last one that I can't pronounce.
The Ner Harami?
Sure.
Harami?
Okay.
Well, that's your answer?
That's my answer, yeah.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. Okay, so... that's not it. That means that, Emma, you could steal right here.
It's Shamash.
Okay, you got it right. Wow, you're a good Jew.
Good Jew.
I didn't go to fucking Brandeis University for nothing, okay?
Okay, so here we go. Now you're going to get your Christmas question.
And by the way, I'd like to point out that if this was the Pornhub Hanukkah album, it would be called the Schmeckle. But
okay, so Emma, on the 4th day of Christmas, what did my true love give to me? Is it turtle doves, calling birds, French hens, or geese a laying?
I think it's calling birds.
Sure?
I think it's calling. I'm not sure, but that's what I'm going to go with.
I have no idea. I mean,
that is correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you guys just took a 2-point lead. It's 3-1. Jews over the Goys. So, well, it's actually just Goy, right? Like, you know, you're not supposed to like
Goyim.
Oh yeah, Goyim. So okay, so that means the Goy is still behind. And Danny, it's your time to try and get the Goy back in the game. The Goy has to get it. Goy in the game.
Goy back in the game.
Okay. Okay, so here's a question for you, Danny. If someone were to light a public menorah, should they not light it again at home? Have someone else in the family light the home menorah? Light the menorah at home, but not have to do the blessings, or light it at home and still read the blessings?
Have someone else light it.
Is that your final answer?
Final answer.
Okay, well, that's incorrect. I'm sorry to tell you. Stuart, you want to make up for being a bad Jew earlier?
You know, I'm not 100% sure with this one. I'm going to go and say, do it and say the blessings again.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
You got it right. You're back to being a good Jew.
You're redeemed.
Wow, the Jews are starting to run away with it, which is not usually what they're known for.
Oh,
a joke!
Oh my God!
Okay, so we're moving on to.
Hey, Chris, remember my racist friends from yesterday?
This is your Christmas question.
Hey, listen, when I'm right, I'm right. All right.
Are you ready?
Yeah, yes, I'm ready. Go for it.
Not you. It's
you said Chris.
No,
and then Stuart, he said you can call him out. Remember that.
Okay, are we ready? Here's, guys, shut the F up. Okay, so here's your Christmas question. Who in the Bible, who appears to tell Mary that she was with child? Who appears in front of Mary to tell her that she's with child? Is it the angel Gadriel, Ezekiel, Gabriel, or Denanam?
It's the angel Gabriel, right?
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
You got it. Number 5. So it's now 5-1. The guys are losing to the Jews. Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
Who's the angel Gadriel?
I just made it up.
I was confused because I was like, is that his like actual name? And people just like shortened, like people just changed it.
Call him Gad for short.
It sounded like Gabriel, so I kind of went with it. Okay, so we're back to the top. So, Elizabeth.
Yes.
Your question is, the Hanukkah miracle took place, is it during the era of the prophets, in the generation prior to the exile from Egypt, during the Second Temple era, or in the Second Talmud epoch?
Boy. Well, it had to do with keeping things lit in a temple, right? I'm really, now I'm like, what did that Rugrats special look like? Think. I will go with the Second Temple era.
Is that your final answer?
That is my final answer.
Guess what? You got it right.
Thanks, Rugrats. Oh,
thank you, deductive reason.
Rugrats is on it, man.
Yep.
Okay, so the Goy just picked up a point, so it's now Jews 5, Goy 2. Right. Okay, so we're going to Joe.
Okay.
Joe, here is your question. According to Jewish law, how many gifts must be given during the holiday Hanukkah, the holiday of Hanukkah? Is it 0 gifts, 1 gift per person, 1 per person per day, or as many as one should want to give?
One per person per day.
Is that your final answer?
That's how my friends told me about it, so.
Okay, well, you should tell your friend that they're bad Jews, because that is incorrect.
That's what they got. Okay.
So, Emma.
Lots of socks.
Emma, do you want me to reread this, or do you know the answer already?
It's 0 gifts. Hanukkah's not a gift.
Right. We made that up. We made it up to get stuff.
Jewish parents made it up so that the kids didn't feel left out of Christmas. Yeah.
Okay. I'm okay with that. That's all made up. So well, I mean, that's the way they did it. They had it 1 gift per day.
I mean, that's when I was a kid, that's how we did it.
Yeah, that's what we do.
It's not Jewish.
There we go. So that's how they all do it. But you know,
it's not Jewish.
So the Jews are now leading 6-2.
So you're all defying the order.
Okay, so Emma,
it's not that you can't give gifts, it's that there's nothing mandated.
You can't tell someone not to give things to people.
Yeah, it's not in Jewish law. That's a certain way purposely. Okay, so Emma, here's your Christmas question. What color are mistletoe berries? Are they red, orange, green, or white?
They're red.
Peter.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Mistletoe berries are actually white.
They're white.
Really?
Yep. Yes.
That was a trick question, wasn't it?
Yeah, really. Well, it's so was the stupid Holly Berries one, too. That was a trick
question. Holly Berries are red.
That's how they get you. That's how they get you.
They got me.
It's all pagan anyway. Just stole it and made it Christian.
Okay, so we're moving on to Chris. Chris, it's your turn now.
Can I get a simple question like a mistletoe?
Here's your question. What, and I'm sure you're going to get this one because it's so easy. What do the four Hebrew letters on the dreidel stand for? Are they eternal values will always triumph, from pain comes strength, a great miracle happened here, or God save us from our enemies?
That's definitely not the last one. wait, read the first three again, please.
I'll give you them all again. Eternal values will always triumph. From pain comes strength, a great miracle happened here, or God save us from our enemies.
I think it's the first one.
So you think it's eternal values will always triumph?
It sounds Jewish.
What does that mean?
It's very traditional. It sounds great.
I was calling it out.
It's very traditional. It's very like the whole family and values
Nice catch. That is actually incorrect. So, Stuart, you could steal now. This could basically put the game away for you guys. So, do you need me to read them again, or do you know
it's
the answer?
It's the miracle one.
Well, I'm sorry?
The miracle.
A great miracle happened here? That is correct. You got that right, Stu. Okay, so you are still a good Jew. Now let's go down to here comes your Christmas question. The three kings bring the baby Jesus frankincense, myrrh, and is it oil, silver, gold, or candles?
I don't think it's gold or silver. I'm going to go with oil.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you're incorrect. It actually is gold.
It's gold.
The way you said it, I don't know why.
So much for being a peasant. He's born in a barn, but he gets gold?
Give him some gold.
He was the king of kings. You give a king gold, sir.
Okay, so we're moving on to Veronica. Veronica, it's pretty much out of reach right now, but let's just have fun with it because it's 7-2 Jews over the guy. Okay, so here's your question. And there's another just so easy question. What was the name of the Judeans who fought the Greeks during what would become the first Hanukkah? Is it the Judas, the Maccabees, the Phoenicians, or the Israelites? Sorry.
Why did they get this one?
Is it the Judas, the Maccabees, the Phoenicians, or the Israelites?
I don't know. The Maccabees?
Is that your final answer?
Sure.
You got it right.
That is.
We were led by someone called you. The head Maccabee was named Judah Maccabee.
It just seemed like, it seems like I've heard something about that, but like it just, yeah.
There's also a ton of Jewish a cappella groups like the Maccabees.
Yeah, Maccabees.
Maccabees.
It was in a Friends episode. Holiday Armadillo.
So this is this next one is our last question about Hanukkah. So what we'll do is after this question, let's just answer all the Christmas questions as well, just to see how we go from here. Let's see if you guys are good Christians.
None of these.
Okay, so Danny,
Danny,
here's the last question, and this honestly. This really is an easy question. I'm not joking about it. According to the dreidel song, what material was used to make the dreidel? Was it wood, metal, clay, or stone?
Clay.
Is that your final answer?
I made you out of clay. Yeah, clay.
You got it right, Danny.
And what did you do when it was dry and ready, Danny?
Okay, so now what we'll do is
Middle, you will play.
Since the Jews have won this game 7-4, but let's just keep playing. But since our Jewish panelists have won, what we'll do is we'll give them the Christmas question first. If they get it wrong, then one of you Christians can answer it. Okay. So so Emma, mm-hmm. What was the first country to put up a Christmas tree? Was it France, the U.S., Germany, or Switzerland?
Can I help with this one?
No.
Okay.
France, the U.S., Germany, or Switzerland? Switzerland? I feel like they'd have pine forests there.
That is incorrect. Let's go to Elizabeth.
Germany.
That's correct.
Tannenbaum.
That would be Martin Luther. Martin Luther did it.
So Stuart, who was the king that wanted to kill my Lord, the baby Jesus? Was it Pilate, Armonite, Herod, or Nathaniel?
It was King Herod.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
You got it right, Stu. Look at you. Okay, and here's our
final
question.
Whoa! Emma.
Emma, our final question of our game. In which direction did the three kings travel to reach the baby Jesus? Was it north, south, east, or west?
Didn't they go by the North Star? Wouldn't it have to be north? Sure, I'm going to say north. Mm.
Okay, well, that is incorrect. I'm sorry. Okay. So let's go to Joe.
The three kings came from the east, so they would be going west.
Oh,
and that is the correct answer. Yes. So even though the game technically was over, the Jews still would have won either way, 8-6. So
of course you got it.
It is your holiday, so congratulations.
It's the crazy answers.
Congratulations, Jews.
You're not a whole lot.
Thank you. Good job. So that is our show for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow at 6 p.m. Bye, everyone. Stay safe and have a good night.